This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Dean
Johnson.
From the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com, and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's Bates Motel After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Bates Motel After Show.
Bing is for doing, and we are doing the Bates Motel After Show. Welcome, welcome. I'm Joe Braswell. I'm here with my good friend Joe Sanfilippo.
Hey, everybody. Nice to be with you.
And the lovely Dua Casey.
Hi, welcome.
And the ever lovely Nando Velasquez.
You can't even
Nando
say that.
Nando Velasquez. I'm sorry.
There's nothing lovely about Nando Velasquez.
He's lovely.
I'm lovely.
I think you're studly, I'm but I wouldn't call you lovely.
Oh, okay.
No,
right,
he knew he was
that.
Lying when he said it. That's why he started laughing.
He was attracted by my loveliness, and he just
is.
Stopped in his tracks by
he
it.
Brings you in. Like ooh.
At Nandoville, thank you for joining us all. We are doing a Bates Motel, our very first Bates Motel after show. We're a little late. We've had one episode premiere, another episode that aired Monday, but we're going to do this episode to catch us all up. We're going to talk a little about the show, talk about the last two episodes, and then get us ready for doing this every Monday. I mean, well, you'll hear every Monday we're going to hear us, I believe.
What would you call this? A very special
every
dual
Wednesday
episode?
I'm sorry, every Wednesday you'll hear us.
This is kind of like, it's like a two-parter. It's like more bang.
This is a very special dual
yeah.
episode.
Yeah.
It's, well, it's like the two-hour season premiere.
It's like more bang for your buck.
There you go.
You know,
yeah.
Usually they have that.
A two-hour season premiere.
We like to cram a lot in, if you know what
yeah.
I'm saying.
Hey, oh. We all stopped there. Welcome. You're already fitting right in with us here, Dua.
Yeah, we all do the following AfterBuzz show together, and this is our first show with Dua, and she I think she's outcrashing Joe Braz already. So
I'm quick witted.
There you go. Good.
There's a lot of testosterone flying about the room. I got to keep up. That's all
right.
I'm saying.
It's all on this side, though. It's all on this side.
So it's like I don't get it. So here we are. So Bates Motel, we have this wonderful show. I mean, from the mind of Carlton Cuse from Lost Fame and his partner Anthony. Is it Cipriano? Is it Soprano?
It looks like it's Italian.
It could be Cipino for all we know. I mean, it's a tricky one.
We're just butchering this poor man. If he created the show.
You know, if he could call in and just let us know exactly how to pronounce his last name.
We'll wait for him to call in.
Our chances of getting him on the show are decreasing as we speak. But
yes.
But for the minds of these two, and it's an Annie show. And look, a lot of buzz leading up to the show.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of somewhat controversial, which we'll get into.
Yeah. Actually, do you mind if I just mention, before we get into the show,
yeah.
if I say something really quick?
Of course.
I just want to clear up something for our listeners that are huge Psycho fans.
Mm-hmm.
This show, Bates Motel by A&E, has absolutely nothing to do with the show of the same title, Bates Motel, that released in the late 80s. So Universal wanted to take what was then the Psycho franchise and make an hour-long show on television. They called it Bates Motel. It aired to terrible ratings in the pilot, and then they shelved it. Now, cut to 2012, where A&E and a lot of people think that this is the same show that they brought back, and it's not.
Right.
It's a completely different show with the exception of the title.
Well, it's weird because when you try to look up any information from that show, and I do remember that show because I'm old, but we try to look up information. They've expunged it from all record. I mean, you cannot find anything on this 80s
baseball show. It's from the record.
No, I'm serious. They've really buried the show.
They took a chisel. They knocked it off the stone.
It's not even... That's all that was.
So I don't know. It's like the emperor. It's like the pharaoh that's been forgotten.
I don't know if this was something Universal did or NBC Universal Castle did in preparation for this, or I don't know if this was done a while ago. Do you know anything about the disappearance of the old Bates Motel? Anything about it?
I just know that when I go to Universal Studios in the backlog tour, there's actually a Norman Bates there. That's all I know about that.
Yes. He's still there. Well, fair enough.
And he's still there.
So we have this show.
I'm not as old as you.
It's fantastic. I think that, like...
He's going to let it go.
We've established that I'm old, please. Thank you very much. We love the show so far. We'll get into that in a second. But I just want to talk about a little bit of the background because there are some expectations here. We're talking about a long-storied... world that Alfred Hitchcock created back in 1962.
1960.
60? Mm-hmm. Okay, see, I'm not that old.
Are you talking about when Psycho came out?
Yes,
it was 1960. Psycho came out.
Mm-hmm. So 1960 is this world that Alfred Hitchcock created. And as we all know the shower scene, we know the house, we know Norman Bates. So to revisit this, this 50 some odd years later.
You have a preconceived notion of the characters already and who they should be.
So it's a really daring thing for them to take and sort of reimagine this.
Mm-hmm. And, well, I think casting Richard Harmon was like
who?
Richard! Oh, the guy that plays Richard.
Did I get it wrong? Norman, right? No,
Norman. No, that's Freddie.
Freddie Highmore. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I beg your pardon, guys.
Well, who's Richard Harmon?
What are you talking about?
Joe Sanfilippo, WTF?
He was in summer school.
That didn't take long.
Isn't he?
I'm sorry, I had the wrong
Isn't
actor.
Is that NCIS, Richard Harmon?
I'm so embarrassed.
This is Bates Motel After Buzz. You're in the wrong room.
I should go yes. I had the wrong actor lined up.
Freddie Highmore. Right.
From Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
And
Neverland.
Yes, and Finding Neverland.
Yes. I think the casting is so unbelievably beautiful because he's you feel for him instantly. He's got that face.
He has that face that is like, I'm the cutest and most innocent thing, but I think he can go to those deep dark places that he's going to need to go to.
Exactly.
That would be a hard casting job.
Well, it is. It's not only he's got the supreme innocence, which you see, because this is obviously, we know, as this being some sort of a prequel, we know where Norman goes. Mm-hmm. So we get to see the innocence of Norman, but you see what's back there before we even see it, because he breaks out a few times, which we'll talk about that, but you see it in his eyes. There's a darkness back there, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I
like it because you're seeing the birth of it as well. It's like, how did Norman Bates get to be the way he is?
Right.
And it starts in the first scene, we'll get to talk about that, but with his father.
Sure.
And that's almost like the birthing of everything that screws him up to the point that he's triggered to do these things.
Which we're seeing, one by one, as well as the casting of Vera Farmiga as Norma.
Boy,
she's so not good. A very inspired, first name. I never knew that was my mother.
They
never had a name.
She never had a name before.
Mother.
It was always mother. Mm-hmm. They never cast her before, and she really didn't. I think that she was in some of the sequels, some of the franchise cycles.
Yeah,
cycle
there
sequels.
Was one.
She was kind of trampy and whorish, but she didn't really have a character. Vera does the most amazing thing with actually saying so much with zero dialogue whatsoever. Her first scene where she opens the door and she's been crying and she's in the bathroom. That first scene when she finds out that Norman knows that her father is dead. She says so much in that first scene.
We're all gigantic Vera Farmiga fans.
Wait, was she crying or was she showering?
She was crying. Well, it looked to me like she had been crying, but she was just like, what's going on? Disheveled. But then when Norman had mentioned it's dad, come quickly, she knew exactly what he was talking about. Mm-hmm. She smirked a little bit,
and
tightens her robe.
She did not come quickly either. She took her time.
Yeah, she did. I'm going to tighten my robe. I'm going to smile a little bit. And then as I leave, I'm going to put on the I'm concerned face for my son.
Which leads us to believe, and we'll get into this right now, but it leads us to believe that Mr. Bates did not die of natural causes, or did not die. It wasn't an accident.
No,
we haven't confirmed that, but we kind of get the sense.
The blood on the floor.
I actually think it was confirmed, and I will tell you about that later. But I think at the end of season two, it was confirmed that she had killed him.
So we are very happy about the show. I think that there was a lot of Twitter buzz in the show, a lot of social media buzz. I think when it premiered, it was trending, which was somewhat unexpected. It's premiered the highest rated show in A&E history. Is that correct?
Correct. It's 4.6. million total. That was the highest rated show in A&E history, but it also played right after Duck Dynasty as well. And Duck Dynasty is A&E's highest rated show ever. Right now, I think it's like about at 9 million or something. It's crazy. It's like the highest rated
People
reality.
People love Duck Dynasty.
I don't get it. People, I don't understand.
That's the one with the guys that were there.
With the beards.
With the beards. Yeah.
Yeah. Like
the
you.
Highest rated reality show ever.
9 million
ever.
People
nine
are
million.
Watching that.
Yes, 9 million people are watching that on A&E.
You're slow down, Flippo. There's some Duck Dynasty fans. going to be pissed.
After that,
you're going to watch your tone.
I don't mean
to
be
hurtful to Toward Duck Dynasty.
You're going to watch your tone.
I just didn't think there were that many of them. I had no idea.
There's 9 million fans are going to kick your ass.
Some shows like to appeal to the lowest common denominator.
It can take 9 million.
So let's get back into this show. So episode one was called First You Dream, Then You Die. And this is our introduction not only to our characters here, but also introduction as to familiar characters we know, but also to the house. Also an origin story of how Norma and Norman got the house and how they became to run the hotel. And sort of we get to that backstory as to the Norman-Norma relationship, which is a little not normal. I mean, Nando, what did you think of this first episode?
I mean, it's creepy and odd and weird and the craziest part is Norman's a babe magnet. I couldn't believe that. He's such a babe magnet.
It's a little too good to be true, isn't it?
Yeah, just a tiny bit. I mean, Freddie Highmore, maybe they know he's Freddie Highmore in Really in Disguise. Right. I don't know.
They might. You and I talked about this. when we were watching this, I was like, where were these girls in high school? So they just a gaggle of hot girls like, welcome to our town.
Are you
going to
come with us?
And
we're hot in the car.
Can I sit on your lap? Let me sit on your lap.
And they like the nerdy introvert. But meanwhile, he's busy, you know, keep creeping on his mom in the window, like, when he's taking out trash or whatever,
So I'm sorry, creepy episode.
Yeah, a very creepy episode.
And what did you think of? I mean, are you? I know that you're not super familiar with the Psycho movies and the
anthology. I unfortunately am not. I mean,
which is fine.
The closest I am to Psycho is I did see Hitchcock. I did see Hitchcock this year, so that's about it. But I need to catch up on it.
That poses an interesting question. I was actually asking Joe earlier. I was having seen the Psycho movie. I was actually wondering if this show by itself would relate to people that haven't seen Psycho, like on its own. Is it a good show?
Well, I think anyone, even if you haven't seen Psycho, you're familiar with the shower scene, of course. That's a classic. And I think you kind of know that Norman wears his mom's clothing. You do know some of the mother scenes that he has. So you are expecting, even if you don't remember right away, I think it clicks that creepy relationship between the two of them and how oddly close they are, and they just see how possessive they are.
It's almost one of those cultural things. It's so ingrained. Everybody knows that there's a mother issue, there's a murder, and Norman did the murder, and mom is still a skeleton in the basement. I mean, we all know that stuff.
Yeah.
So even if you haven't seen the movie in forever, that's still there, a little bit lurking, you know?
And if you have seen the movie, you know this was all explained in that very last scene of Psycho, very conveniently explained by the police officer who did that.
Yeah, it did. They did it in one scene. They explained the entire movie in one scene.
Matricide. You see, the boy loved his mother, but he killed the old bag with a la la la. You know, the whole. And that's why he wore the wig. That I'm paraphrasing, but that's essentially
how it went. Okay.
So for you, no problems in terms of like being able to, you know, you didn't feel like you had to have a background or back.
Not really. I mean, the only thing, and you know, you guys can correct me there, that one scene in the bathroom when they were disposing of Keith Summers.
Uh-huh.
You know, obviously, when you see the shower, it just automatically clicks in to anybody, whether you're familiar with the movie or not.
Sure.
I'm assuming that people who are very familiar with the movie, there might be some hidden little Easter eggs here and there. I'm sure there's some stuff I'm missing. But as far as a generalization, it works well on its own.
Great. My takeaway on that, in terms of the old versus the new, is I think that they've done a really fantastic job of, you know, making the show completely new, completely new characters, but adding enough of the old stuff. I mean, really down to, you know, the details of the house, the details of the kitchen, the details of the stairwell. Actually, that the same shot that Hitchcock uses, an overhead shot over the stairwell, is a shot they use in the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very much, everything you see is very familiar to the, and very true to the movie, yet it's a bunch of different characters sort of populating this.
I will ask one thing, since the three of you, I guess, are a little more on your Psycho trivia than I am. Except for Sanfilippo. Okay, two. Is it a little jarring to see a classically old motel and see Norman Bates watching black and white movies on an old TV, and yet everyone seems to have an iPhone?
Dua brought this up.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up.
It's interesting observation on that, Dua.
Time for people that watch Psycho, time is a very, very interesting thing to Norman Bates. Like, obviously, he's not willing to let go of time between everything that went on with his mother.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the show, everything that happens outside of the world of his mother is present day. everything that happens inside of the world with his, like, in the house and everything, it's almost like the same for people that watched Lost. Mm-hmm. It's almost the same as the hatch was in Lost. The hatch was stuck in 1970, so everybody went down to the hatch. You'll still hear old music, old records. So it is very is like this is kind of Norman Bates's world. And for me, the world around him is almost like a projection of the world that he thinks that it could be. Because no, like for the example, the girls that you mentioned. No girls do that. No high school girls are sitting there telling you to get in the car, asking you to get on their lap. And everybody is oddly interested in him. The school teacher, mm-hmm. when she was holding his hand, wanting him
where is this town?
The girl with the cystic fibrosis. Like have you noticed that everybody is oddly like intrigued and they're really nice to him. And I think that it's very surreal and a little Twilight Zone-y.
Yeah. It could be surreal and you could absolutely be 100% be right. But I would argue that there are, I used to call them closet pimps. Like, there are guys who you just wouldn't think, you would be like, ah, that guy, I got him. And then then girls they just go nuts. Right. And for the rest of us guys, we're like, screw that guy. I hate that guy. The guy does not make any sense. He can't play football. He can't handle anything.
Joe, is there anything you need to clear about your past?
I might have some issues. But I do remember
some guys,
those guys
just have charm, Joe.
They do. They just slide right through.
It's okay.
Yeah. Like there's no rational reason, but there he is, and he like can't beat him off with a stick.
Regardless, it's still a little weird, right? Because you would never think that he would be the type of person. So right. I just think the whole world is a little weird. That town is really, really weird. The people are weird.
I think it's an interesting thing that's sort of set in this Pacific Northwest town. I mean, that's kind of cool. I mean, I'm a little Pacific Northwested out after Twilight and some other things, but it's still in The Killing and some other things that kind of have had enough of the mist and the fog. Portlandia.
Yeah, totally.
I love them. But, but for this, it really works. It really, really works. But I think this is the whole thing about the house being old and sort of time standing still inside the house and the hatch reference, which I love.
I love that.
But it's a great way to sort of play an homage to the old Psycho of 1960 because really that house is the house. I mean, the furniture is the same, the shots are the same, the pictures on the wall are the same in the hotel. So it's really the same, but it's really a great way to say this house sort of existed in this one time as we all remember it from the movie. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I think it's a really cool way to introduce that.
And Norma's clothing as well, if you notice, her clothing exactly is like back in, it was like very 1960s.
When she changed to go out with the cop, when she was dressed up to go out with the deputy in episode 2, that was jarring.
Yeah.
Like when she came out with the kind of like, am I trying too hard shirt?
Uh-huh.
That it was absolutely jarring because everything up till then had felt so stylized and so specific. And from the Mercedes all the way up through, like you said, her wardrobe, everything.
Yeah.
So wow.
So the pilot, it had to do a couple things here, and I want to talk about it if we think, you know, what a job it did. The pilot did two things. It had to introduce us to these characters, you know, introduce us to this world and these characters and make us want to watch more, but also sort of give us an origin story to what the story we already know. So you got to give us an origin story to, we already know where this thing's going. So this is kind of how this happened. This all happened in the pilot. We know where Norman and Norma came from. We know how they got the hotel. We know the motel. We know why, a little bit about their close relationship. We know why Norman's a little nutty and there's some history there. So we can foreshadow as to where this might go. But also did a good job of making us sort of care about Norman as a character, even though we know he's going to end up being a master suicidal maniac and even sort of care about the world that he lives in. So I thought the pilot was one of the better pilots I've seen in a long time for all the reasons. I don't know.
You understand both characters. You come to get sympathy for Norma and Norman's character. I think that two very, very pivotal things happen in the pilot. The tragedies happen to both characters. Mm-hmm. Norman experiences the death of his father and Norma gets violently raped.
Yeah.
These two tragic episodes in the pilot bring them closer together. And so you understand how their relationship, as unhealthy or incestuous or crazy, you understand how
all
it came
above
to be.
Yeah.
And once you can get sympathy for somebody that, you know, ends up being a killer, that's a big job on the writer's part.
Absolutely. So I think it's a great, great job.
Like I said, them casting that kid, I don't remember his name.
Freddie Highmore.
Freddie Highmore. Yeah, them casting Freddie Highmore, I really think is I just make it a little funny.
Bobby Smith was great.
Frank Boris.
John Doe.
I really think that their casting for Norman was just nothing short of brilliant. Yeah. I mean, yeah. honest to God, he's just you want to give him a hug, and you know that's not an easy thing to do, to be that likable, knowing yeah. that, and we all know going forward, this guy winds up being a wackadoo.
He's probably learned a little from Johnny Depp.
Yeah, a lot. Two Johnny Depp movies.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And that, you know,
the worst places to be.
So I do want to peel back. I want to peel back and dive a little bit into the relationship, because we get to see. You know, we talked a little bit about Norma, and you know, and we saw her and her conniving ways. But I want to talk a little bit about, you know, this performance and just, well, the character of Norma and her, you know, her manipulation of Freddie Highmore, her manipulation of Norman, her homicidal ways. This is kind of a deep character. Is she? The question I have is she just nuts in our opinion, or is she? That's me. Sorry. is she just nuts, or is she? I mean, how is she? What motivates her?
I would not argue that she's nuts. I like her backstory. She married the first time at 17.
Yep.
Right,
yep.
With the older brother. Mm-hmm. So you're a baby at that point, and whatever was going on at home, clearly she wanted out bad enough to get married to somebody at 17 to get out. I mean, that could be inferred. I don't know that it wasn't implied. That's my, I'm inferring that.
Oh,
that was
dear.
Not implied.
There
did you see what I did?
Yeah, I saw what you did there, yeah.
But I think that's interesting. Is, you know, you learn young that you're the only one that can really help you.
Mm-hmm.
And,
you're absolutely right. She said it even at the dinner table when she was talking to Norman. She was like, when he was going to go to track, and she was like, well, I thought you were going to help me with the motel. She's like, that's fine. I'll do it the way I've done everything else myself,
right.
as usual. Like, she's a survivor.
Sure. Yeah.
And she does what she can to survive. I'm sorry. You can continue. I apologize. I cut you off.
No, adding to conversation is never cutting me off.
All right.
No, he cuts me off. He's because he's mean-spirited.
Well, think about why I do that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So I think she's very clearly manic-depressive. And she, when she gets excited, she's so up there.
Mm-hmm.
And then when she comes crashing down, it's all the way down. And he rides that with her up and down.
Yeah.
We see that in the pilot. They're so codependent. What's that?
We see that. I cut you off there. We see that in the pilot. We see that back and forth when they have that argument. I'm like, Mom, what are we going to do? You shut up. Don't lie. And then that sort of like that real,
yeah.
that escalated, elevated sort of highs and low, very manic argument they had, which was really creepy. Scared me.
And her, I love what Vera Farmiga, is it?
Farmiga.
I just, oh my gosh, she's so damn good. It's mm-hmm. unreal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so much is just on her face. There's no words. There's nothing. There's no dialogue. We're just the disappointment and the anger and I'm putting it away and I'm moving on. I can't even imagine being on set with her. Must be phenomenal. But the character she's put together has so much going on. The highs, the lows, the twisted stuff from the past. I think that they're giving us so much to enjoy with her. At no point does she feel cheap. Does she feel tawdry?
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Nothing about her.
Completely 100% believable at every level. And what you do believe, you know, for whatever reason, I do believe that she completely loves, you know, Norman. I mean, if for anything mm-hmm. else, there is no manipulation. Maybe she manipulates him and maybe she tries to control him, but she does genuinely love him.
Yeah, I think she does it to keep him close to her because she thinks that he'll be safe there. And I think that with everything that she's experienced in her life, that she probably wants him close with her for her as well. And so, and I also don't want to gloss over the fact that Norman and Norma's character, Freddie and Vera, also work really well together.
Yeah.
Like the scenes with them together are like they're small little subtleties, like in episode 2 where the girl from Cystic Fibrosis comes up and she's talking. That scene in the kitchen with then also Dylan, who is the brother, that scene is... You have telepathic with Vera and Freddie, Norma and Norman, and then you also have a telepathic conversation with Dylan and Norman because Norman wants Norma to kind of get out of the
sure.
way so he can talk
right.
to her. So there are all of these little nuances going on in this scene while the actual verbal conversation is between the girl with cystic fibrosis and Norma.
And the writing on that scene in particular, because it's worth talking about. So what's your life expectancy? 27. Long look to Norman. Just a reminder.
Exactly. Like,
she's not going to make it, buddy.
I'm going to be here, baby. She's going to be gone in 10 years. I'm just reminding you.
And there was no, in that conversation with her, there was no like, oh, I'm sorry, 20, that's
no,
awful.
You're 100% right.
Right. It was just 20, oh, 27.
27.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you guys go on upstairs.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Have fun.
Better hurry. Don't have time.
I do want to get into episode 2. I do want to get into episode 2 in a second, but I just to wrap up a little bit of episode 1, I want to talk
about the
bit.
Rape scene.
Well, I want to get into that
about the rape scene in the book.
But I first want to talk about Norman. You know, we talked about Norman. Norman a little bit. I want to talk about Norman and sort of where in the development of this character and where his motivation, because you're beginning to see, we talked about this sort of rage underpinning of this rage underneath, his supreme resentment of his mother, but at the same time, he loves her. There's clearly a, you know, dare I say it, attraction to his mother.
Oh, a little bit.
It's
a little
all
bit.
Of it. And which seems to be not, I mean, it's almost like, in episode two, it's known by Vera Farmiga, like, oh, well, it's okay, it's natural, you're looking at me, and it's okay, it's not weird, and
I'm your mother.
Like, you know, that scene was great. So, but what about Norman? Like, what do we think of this kid, Nando?
I'm still trying to figure him out, because there's a dark side to him that you see from his anger earlier in the first episode, and yet. Again, there's an odd attraction about him, apparently, with everybody in the town. He's very likable.
They cast this kid. Likeable. What's his name?
Freddie.
Freddie Highmore, as they call him.
Fred, Billy.
Jimmy Two Times? What's
Jimmy
his name?
Jimmy Two Times.
He's good, I hear.
But, yeah, I mean, I totally believe him as Norman Bates. And like I said, just a very odd, but a very nuanced character. Very nuanced.
Right. I love how quiet he is at that party. He's totally willing at the party to take a step back. He's just watching everybody, mm-hmm. seeing where everything's at. I think the characters are so fleshed out. It's really, I don't know how rare it is, but it feels rare to me that you see something that is this, you see characters this completely realized from pilot, from right. go.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
Well, they have some help. The characters are already fully formed from right. Hitchcock.
But you understand what I'm saying. Well,
that's a really good point, is that in your head they've been fully formed.
Yeah.
But
and so it's I think this show is going to be spectacular. As long as the writers don't screw it up, this show will go far. But I think that a lot of the characters were formed in our head first. Like right. what everybody, you said it yourself at the beginning, everybody has their idea of who Norman was, right. you know, even if you haven't seen the movie Psycho. So it just kind of fills in all the blanks for this. And you're like, oh, yeah, that makes, I could see it. Yes, I could see it. It's full. It's good. I love it. I love the show.
I do. So let's get to the key. Well, I'm sorry, Joe, go ahead.
Well, I think we should just talk. I think we should talk about the rape and the sketch.
Well, yeah, that's
where you're going?
I was
going
to go there.
You should go there.
All right.
I'm going to wait.
So I think that we should...
should go there now.
I think we should talk about the key moment of the show, the pilot, which sort of is the big turning point for both Norma and Norman, which is the attack and the rape and the murder.
The graphic rape.
Yes. Yeah. Now, before you know, there's been controversy about the rating.
You said absolutely. MA-14, which I had never heard of.
It is, well, no, PG-14.
Oh, PG-14.
PG-14. Right. The show is PG-14, and I'll get a little bit into the more of that with news and gossip about all of that stuff. But the show, and I think it's based on this scene that we're about to talk about, has gotten a lot of controversy.
Right.
Because she gets raped.
Right.
She violently.
She gets raped. She gets, you know, and she's assaulted and then raped, and then a very bloody multiple stab murder takes place, and then a very bloody cover up takes place as well. And so, I mean, if we don't.
Personally, I was impressed with the manual dexterity of what was his name?
Keith
mm-hmm.
Keith Summers. Yeah,
for a drunk, he handcuffed her pretty quick to that table. I was impressed.
It's like it wasn't his first time.
I think not. I think it was not his first rodeo. and kicking her out in the chest.
Oh. Yeah,
it was rough.
Wow. Yeah.
Nope. That's rough.
Again, PG-14, huh?
Yeah, this show is PG-14.
Very violent.
You'll have to explain PG, but you will. You'll break that down for us.
Well, I mean, I guess it's okay. That's what it is.
So the key thing about this is that, you know, Norman had that big moment of rebellion against Norma, like where he was very resentful and he snuck out and I'm leaving, you know, where he wanted to go with the girls, but he wasn't there for his mom. And the whole time she's calling for Norman. And of course he did show up at the end, he did help her, and then that was that. But that's a key forming, very, very telling thing about that relationship and how Norman maybe
it starts his guilt.
Yes.
The amount of guilt that he feels about the fact that he wasn't there to help stop his mother get raped.
Right.
Is going to have this guilt. And she's so manipulative. She's going to use this guilt again and again and again until they form a creative relationship that he can't get away from.
Right. And then the other piece here, which is the obvious thing, is the murder. Once he gets up and he calls her, you know,
Joe, you said something really, really poignant.
She kills Vera,
him. She stabs him a couple times.
But I just love her so much. It's not even, I can't even, everything she does on screen, I'm like, you are a genius. You need to give classes that I can come and see. She starts, dude, what does he say? You know you liked it, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right? And then she does a good piece of hair acting, and she reels back, and she hits, boom, right in the chest, and the hair flows down, right? Mm-hmm. Then she stabs him. I think, I want to say the next three were in rage, mm-hmm. and he's down. But numbers five and then six mm-hmm. were so different. It was like she was tired, but there was something else going on. The rage was gone, but she wasn't done with him yet.
It was like this, like, meditative. She was, like, very zen yeah. about the fact that now she knew what she was doing now. She was completely conscious. Everything else had worn off. And yet, I'm still going
to
kill you.
I'm not yeah. done with you.
Yeah.
It harkened back to the shock of, I mean, not to just jump to our other show, but in that scene in The Americans where Carrie Russell jumps on one of the other characters.
On
Grandma and punches her in the face and then jumps on top and continues to punch her. This was, I mean, he was three stabs. He's probably gone. She one more for good measure, but then the last couple were like, whoa.
There was something going on with her face. I can't even describe it, but it wasn't rage and it wasn't anger. It was like this, I need to do this.
Yeah.
It was bananas. And so many props to Vera for that. I mean, my God, and that was amazing.
And then when Norman walks in, the position they were in, pretty much, which was her on top of him
yeah.
in an almost, sexual
sure.
position.
Yeah. yeah, that was
yeah. As a total 180 from when he first walked in
exactly.
before.
Exactly. It was mm-hmm. definitely him, like, what the, obviously, she, you know, he dominated her and raped her, but by the end, she was on top of him, dominating him, and dare I say, penetrating him. Mm-hmm. So that was... That's what happened.
You both dared.
You dared.
We both dared. Yeah. Yeah. Not a lot of dare we say.
Your dare was deeper than his dare.
Hey, oh,
that is.
Hey-o. All right.
No. didn't even know that. I was going there. I didn't know.
So and then they obviously there's a cover up, and then there they are. They're born. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the end of episode one, which was was great. And then and that scene in the boat at the end. That
was
sweet.
Nothing like a nice Folgers moment of killing somebody to really bring mother-son bonding together.
Right. Again, no question how Norman's going to come out. I mean, ain't going to be right.
That boy ain't right.
So let's jump into episode two. But before I want to, and talk to our folks that are listening via iTunes. And, you obviously can watch us on YouTube if you want. But on iTunes, you can download us. Not just us, but the entire AfterBuzz family, AfterBuzz TV, all of our shows. We do over 60 shows. We get, up to over 20 million hits a week. All of us have done shows here, and they're fantastic. You can find your favorite show. You can download it. This is a new one. Please find us. Comment, rate, give us fives. We love fives, and we'd like to hear your feedback. We'll talk to you. We'll interact with you. Joe will personally come to your house and
wash your car.
Yes.
Oh, I was gonna say bake you cookies, but hey,
you don't want to eat any
you
cookies.
You don't want cookies. Yeah.
so please, but thank you very much for listening. If you're listening to us on iTunes, and please continue to do so. And please comment. So episode two. Which was this Monday, was called Nice Time You Picked Norma.
Nice yeah. Town. Nice
Town. Thank you.
We have a board here that we write stuff on. And
that was not me.
Okay.
When we 1, 2, 3, not it.
Our producer's saying, it was not me.
No, it's good.
It's a mystery. There's a mystery afoot. Somebody wrote time.
It's called Nice Town You Picked Norma.
Nice Town You Picked Norma.
It does say Nice Time. It is Nice Town.
It does say Nice Time.
Where we get into, a little into the town itself, we've got a lot about Norma and Norman, and we start to unpack the town. We get a little more into our friendly neighborhood sheriff and deputy. Oh, we get a little more into the kids. We meet our lovely woman with the CF.
Cystic fibrosis. Emma, I believe her name is. Emma.
Actually, she had one scene in episode one.
We met her early.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. One small scene.
Well, we get to like meet her a little more, and we got a little more about that. But any particular thoughts that jump out at you about episode two, Nando?
For me, I think the introduction of Dylan.
And Dylan.
Yeah. The introduction of Dylan was just great. Max
Thoreau.
Exactly. I didn't want to pull a San Filippo.
Is that what it's called? Why don't we just call it a Flippo? The sand part just seems complicated.
No, I mean, really, really interesting character. I'm guessing that he was never mentioned in the movie at all.
No.
I'm guessing he's not going to make it.
No.
But very, very complex.
For sure.
And just the way he treats his mom.
Yeah.
Calling her whore. I love how the iPhone rings in the house, and Norman sees it says the whore, and then finds out it's Norma.
Yeah.
Can't even call her mom. Has to call her Norma. So.
Well, it's funny, too, because if you look, I feel like if I would have walked in watching the episode where it is Norma and Dylan in the kitchen when she's like, I hate you, it looks like this is a conversation between two ex-lovers.
Right.
Yeah. It does not look like everything. There's such an incestuous undertone with Norma and her offspring.
Her children, yeah.
It's so creepy.
It very much is like an ex in a scorn level. Yeah, it's ex, like, their exes.
It was. It's like, have they been dating? She's like, I hate you. Like, this isn't, and I was like, oh my goodness. Right. She doesn't know where to draw that boundary.
And that extends to Dylan and Norman in all their scenes, too. There's there's some jealousy there. There's, it's kind of, well, I mean, it's jealousy there because it's sibling jealousy, but it does seem there's a little bit more underneath it.
Yeah, like their fight was actually about her. That's a very astute observation.
Yeah.
Right. It was,
she's not a whore.
Exactly. She really does enjoy male attention. Like that scene with her and the deputy when he's, you know, the way that, again, Vera, I love you. The way that she's enjoying his attention, like she's leaning in a little bit, but then when he gives her the attention she needs, she comes back and just the glow on her face.
Right.
Mm-hmm. When she gets what she wants from men, she wants the attention, she wants the adoration. And I think she wants that from her sons also.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets it from Norman, but obviously not from Dylan.
And that's how she responds when she doesn't get what she wants.
Screw you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a different word, but we can't say it on this show.
So Dylan shows up and he's, you know, he's very, you know, his relationship with his mom, we talk about that, but he's also, you know, hinting at something. He's hinting at, you know, where did you get all this money, mom? Or, you know, where did you get all this money, Norma?
Mm-hmm.
And whatever happened to old pops? Whatever happened to this? And whatever happened to that? And so he clearly knows something. We find out at the end that he does know something.
Right.
But, or he suspects something.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Not that this family isn't dysfunctional already, but he definitely throws a wrench in the relationship. And then obviously he's interacting with the town too, and we see that he is having some mysterious job that involves owning a gun.
Handling a gun.
Maybe he doesn't own it, he knows how to handle it.
Right.
But when you find your reference at a strip club who's crying, like when they're crying at a strip club and you're like, and all of a sudden you have a job, you're like,
I told you, the only other guy I've ever seen cry at a strip club is this one right here. Baby, it's crazy to see.
She was so sweet.
You got to put those
roses.
Oh, Tiffany. Yeah,
if that's your real
charisma.
Name.
Charisma.
Yeah. There you go.
So we're, you know, and this is actually, speaking of which, this town, it was a bit of a small town.
Every
town's got a strip club. There's only one woman and two guys there, but, you know, it's a small town. Every town's got a strip club. So we get to know a little more about the town, former logging town. We see this whole mysterious thing with a homegirl's dad, you know, driving, burning down the road.
Yeah.
I mean, what, you know.
On fire.
His warehouse got burned down. Something happened. His warehouse got burned down. And then there was that whole, so he was burned in a coma. Do we know whether or not he's dead?
We don't know yet. They don't think he's going to pull through. Don't expect him to pull through.
There's something that I want to bring up. And this is kind of, I was talking to you before, Nando, about how Lost always had these little Easter eggs popped in.
Mm-hmm.
The flower that Norman had with him.
Yeah.
Was called a cyclamen.
Wow.
And a cyclamen is better referred to as a Persian violet, and it is a highly poisonous flower that actually has meaning that relates to death and that all things, good things, will eventually end.
Wow.
So I think that was really poignant.
I dated her once. The Persian violet?
Oh, no.
What's the other time you cried?
Yeah.
Charisma, the Persian violet. All right. I got to say, Nando, you got to step up your game.
I know. What's going on?
Dua goes deeper than you do.
She's doing some deep dives.
She's got a head start on this. She's got a head start on this. That was serious.
This is the first show. It's all downhill from here, guys.
That's what happened with me in the following, actually. Same thing.
Yeah. So there you go.
So the town, the mysterious town, we know there's some criminal activities in this town. A lot of interesting characters. We get a little more about the sheriff and the dynamic to the sheriff. We can see our friend Richard from Lost.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you know what? I like that they have these classic characters. They have the classic good cop, bad cop character. Yep. Romero is the bad cop, really aloof. That guy that plays Richard, I forgot what his name is. He loves to play these crazy... Shelby?
The other one's Shelby. I'm sorry. Nestor, you're talking about the actor?
Nestor's the actor.
Nestor.
Yeah, he loves to play these crazy, mysterious characters where you don't know what his motive is.
Yeah.
But they're still the classic characters, good cop, bad cop. Mm-hmm. But so many layers to them.
Well, the moment we do before we're on timer, the moment I do want to talk about, we have to get into the whole arc of Emma. You know, is that her name?
Emma.
Cystic fibrosis.
Well, let's the whole Nancy Drew.
Well, it starts with the sketchbook.
Yes,
the sketchbook that Norman found.
Love the sketchbook.
This sketchbook is deep, man.
Wow.
That's. I mean, you know, if you looked at, I was looking at those pictures in the sketchbook. The fifth or sixth time I rewound it.
Yes.
And no. But what was interesting to me about the sketchbook is none of the girls. They didn't look particularly terrified. It's very clear to me that the person who did the sketching, my opinion anyway, it clearly picked an emotion to go with from each girl, but it didn't look like raw terror. There was always something else. There was like determination or confusion or maybe there was a little bit of sex to them, but it didn't look like they were that afraid.
Well, it was almost like a love journal in a way. I mean, she did refer to it as manja, which I guess they. For lack of a better way of saying it.
Manga?
I believe it's manja.
Okay.
Manga. Pardon me.
We can't pronounce a goddamn thing.
Yeah, not
on
today,
show,
man. What's in these cups? What's in here?
Charisma. Manga on the stage. Charisma.
Well, manga pretty much, for lack of a better word, embraces a lot of really weird. Deviant type of things,
sure.
Like tentacle sex, for example, all that kind of stuff.
I'm not familiar with it.
No?
Tentacle sex?
Yeah.
We'll
debrief you later.
On.
We'll move on.
He's going to go home and look it up after the show.
Go ahead.
Look
sex with an octopus. I haven't been there.
All sorts of weird things, but it just seems to be that the owner of this journal is almost, like I said, a love journal. It's something that he enjoys and likes. I'm not saying, I guess it's his interpretation.
Sure. Well, you know, the guy who the rapist murderer.
Keith Summers.
He did allude to, like, I know all the secrets of this house.
Yeah.
He alluded to the secrets. And then, so in that episode, you know, Norman.
Now, do you think that's
board.
Keith's journal?
I think Keith is up to that.
Well, because also, or do you think, because that was room number 4. It was Keith's hotel. His house had it. His family owned it beforehand. Mm. It was underneath the carpet of room number 4.
Right.
It could have been. If he raped Norma. Maybe that's his journal.
Let me ask you a question. Do you, I personally, in my few moments with Keith, I don't feel that Keith is up to that journal. I don't feel that Keith at any point would have been up to that journal.
Well, who's friends with Keith that we just learned about?
We do know that the sheriff is friends with Keith, and the sheriff certainly has a little bit more interesting stuff going on. He could, but now the journal told a story though. I mean, she translated the the writing on the journal.
This is our girl Emma, who's
Emma
Nancy Drew. She comes back. She's cracked the case like Thelma from Scooby Doo.
So she went ahead and translated all the. I don't know if it was Chinese or what.
We're good.
Yeah.
Go.
Oh, okay.
No, she cracked the case, got us on the road, and they're off to check out to find these mystery dead bodies, but they do discover some pot instead.
Lots of pot. Apparently, this whole town runs on weed, and that was alluded to by the cop when he broke it down for us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we this is very interesting, and we. Are we going to have time to go further? Or
yeah,
are we
we're
about
good.
There?
No, we're fine.
I don't know about that.
What?
I don't think we have much time, guys.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what?
I'll have to give you an extended episode next time.
I'm looking. It's, I'm looking at our clock, but I forgot about the real clock.
Yeah.
Real clock.
Yeah.
So 9 o'clock.
We're running so tight.
Oh, we're out. Okay. Well, let's go straight to predictions then.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I'll get into the news and gossip next week. Where we got?
We'll get you a longer episode. Hour 15 maybe next time.
It's 9:03 here, so we're definitely.
It was hard. We had to cover 2 episodes. It's totally fine. I have one prediction, and I don't mean to cut you off.
No, go for it.
This is my one prediction.
Give me a chance.
I think that Little Miss Cystic Fibrosis Oxygen Tank is going to be the next person that Norma and Norman are burying.
I agree.
Really?
I agree, but go ahead, Nana.
I was going to put my money on Shelby. Officer Shelby.
Oh, I could take that. You know what? I think it's too soon for... I think that Shelby would be all Norman's doing, and I think it's too soon for Norman to do a killing himself.
Okay.
I disagree with both of you. I think the brother is next. I think Dylan will get wackified, and maybe with that meat tenderizer that Norman is so hip to put in his head.
He won't miss next time.
Maybe he won't miss. Jinx. Go ahead, Joe. You done?
That's it. That's okay.
My prediction is I believe that Nancy Drew is onto something here. Emma, when she's going to thing she'll uncover will probably be what happened to old Keith. And then that's why they will have to take her out. So we'll see. So let's get out. Well, thank you for joining us for this wonderful special two-part season premiere after show. Doa, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Doa Casey. It's DuaKaissi. Or I'm here buzzing about the client list on Monday nights.
Nando, where can we find you, sir?
You could find me at Nandovel, N-A-N-D-O-V-E-L. I also do AfterBuzz for The Walking Dead, Celebrity Apprentice, The Amazing Race, and The Following.
Yes.
I know, I'm never
a couple of bozos.
I know.
Where can we find you, Joe Flippo?
You can find me at Joe Flippo at the Twitters, at J-O-E-F-L-I-P-O. And I also do The Following with Joe Braz and Nando Val on Mondays. And on Wednesdays, we do The Americans, which would be today. But it is not. We don't have an episode this week, so we will be back next week.
Yes, we will.
Yes, indeed.
You can find me at Joe K. Braswell at Twitter and on Grantland.com for some stuff I have going on there. And also here, like you said, at The Americans and The Following. And also Justified for one more week. Thank you so much for listening and joining us. We will have our ish together next week, and we'll be right on time, and we'll see you later.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.